Hey listeners, this is Pete with a real quick promo. No advertising. We have a running food contest on the Redwall subreddit, R Eulalia, and it goes through the end of February. I'm encouraging all of our listeners, please enter. We'd love to see some cooking from you. And the chosen three winners will be invited back onto the podcast for the next food episode. We'd love to have you on, so get those ovens up firing and stay away from Sister May's recipes. And now, here's your Lord Brocktree. Welcome back, Weary Travelers, to Recorder on the Wall, where we're going through the entire Redwall franchise from start to finish. I'm Pete.
I'm Jeremy.
I'm Katie.
I'm Drew.
We haven't heard from Wilder this morning. I'm sure he'll be coming along, hopefully, and we'll go from there.
Maybe he's also having Skype issues.
Could also be in this podcast? No. That's impossible.
Skype is the perfect program. What are you talking about?
Oh, I forgot. I'm so sorry.
And we are exploring other ways to record, folks, but for the moment, we're going to keep going to our normal pattern. We read the middle book of Lord Brocktree, which is named... What is it?
Oh. I just remember Dottie's title.
At the Court of King Bucko, also there entitled... The Tribulations of a Hair Maid.
You know, if you're going to crown yourself a king, you can come up with a better name than Bucko. Just saying. But yeah, this was the middle part of the book, and all things considered, there was somehow a lot of things happen, but there was also a lot of, let's sit around and wait for the next thing to happen.
Mm-hmm.
At some points.
Yeah, it felt like a lot, it does feel like a lot happened, but no, like there were very few big events. In it.
It was mostly build-up, yeah.
A lot of prep, but not much pep.
Well, as we point out with Metameo Book 2, like, the chase didn't actually go anywhere. I mean, they stayed about the same distance apart, so that's why the B-plot was so much more interesting.
Yeah, this one didn't even really have a B-plot.
No. All this is definitely interconnected. We don't have any new villains show up. So...
Did we not meet the, what is his name? The fox, that was, I can never remember his
Karen
name.
Karen Ghoul or something like that?
Yeah, did we meet
we
him
did,
in this book?
He was new.
Yeah.
He was new.
Okay. I was like, I tried not to read ahead again.
So it's the, yeah, he's new, but the Corsair guy, He's just kind of the, right-hand man to Trun at this point, because most of his big officers are either dead, imprisoned, or otherwise unavailable.
Plotting revenge.
Yeah,
it started off so well, too, in book one. We were like, man, he has so many officers, he's so well-regimented, and in this one, it's like, everyone dies.
And HR is going to be... Vermin HR is going to keep filing out paperwork for days at this rate. If you missed us last time, what happened? Well, we have a couple of badgers walk around. We have got Stonepaw, who's at Selmanistron, defending it from this wildcat with his massive army outside Selmanistron. Meanwhile, his son, that he's now hasn't seen in seasons, Brocktree, is on his way to Selmanistron, and he meets up with his own
Misfit
group.
Squad.
Yeah, pretty much. With the best singing voices in all of Mossflower.
As we are subjected to repeatedly.
They're not very good.
I remember this was the book where I was like, geez, there are a lot of songs in this book.
And see, I never really noticed, but like the thing with me and my career that I picked, I read stuff physically all the time, like transcripts and everything. So as often as I can, I like to do audio just because that's kind of my pleasure reading type stuff. So mm-hmm. With audio, especially, Brocktree wasn't an official full cast audio book, but with audio, the songs that they do are really kind of fun because they have music and everything.
Oh, okay.
So I didn't really mind the songs, but that was why, because I got to listen to them.
But were they horribly sung? That's the question.
No. Yeah, that might be the reason that Jake's decided not to do this one in full cast audio, so we wouldn't have to listen to Dottie sing.
And the last major group running around is a hare from Stone Paul's garrison named Fleetscut. So, and he's got a few, he's got a bunch of squirrels following him, Chugga the Sling, and as the book ended, we found they were in the company of a bunch of hedgehogs. That's pretty much where we pick up. So, new characters introduced in this book. No villains, like I said.
Well, kinda. Well,
sort of. The, what's his name? Gabool?
Karen Ghoul.
Thank you.
Yes, I'm going to be... I'm not quite sure of the pronunciations on these things just because of there not being an audio... audiobook to this one.
Yeah, so Karen Ghoul is kind of the only new villain and he's just another officer and...
Yeah, they don't go into... They don't do much with him outside of the fact that he has a strange accent where he kind of just doesn't use specific words in his sentences. I don't know.
I didn't understand the purpose of that. Like, okay, does it make him talk funny? Sure.
Because Brian likes accents and dialects.
I mean, that's true, I guess.
Yeah. He likes using apostrophes a lot.
And then on the hero side, we have pretty much... We have a couple of... three major groups introduced. We have the Hedgehog Tribe, as I mentioned, the Rabble, who is allegedly headed by this Baron... I'm going to slaughter this.
Drucco?
Someone help me. Drucco. Yeah.
Yes.
But as we quickly find out, the real power behind the throne is his wife, so...
Merkelwort.
Merkelwort or something, yes.
Yeah. But she will happily... you know, I kind of read this as she's giving him, like, a bald head, but she takes off a couple of head spikes anytime he steps out of line.
Yes.
I want to say, I think this is one of the first books where the names start to get a little weird.
Yeah.
Like I feel like there's a point in the series where the names stop being things that are just, oh, this is a flower, or this is, you know, they're named after something, and the names just start getting more and more bizarre and harder to remember, and harder to pronounce as well.
Yes, I find it kind of amusing, especially like in Loamhedge, we have Sarah Bondo, and then Martha. It's like, okay, Martha. Well,
where do you know that name?
Go away, Batman. We have a skipper of not just otters, but sea otters. We have a Brogala.
I think it's Brogala, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, that sounds better. But we have a skipper of otters for the first real time in the podcast.
Yeah,
but he's not the river kind. This is a sea otter. So.
And his mother.
Okay. Who, yeah. Yeah.
His stereotypically female emotional mother.
Yeah, I'm pulling a joke from the other cast here, but I kind of read her in that, same way we did Jason's mom, Jeremy.
Okay.
Why don't you inform everybody, because you're better at it.
So, on our other podcast, Pete and I reviewed Friday the 13th, Part 3, and we decided that Jason Voorhees' mom is the stereotypical Jewish mother.
Oh. Beautiful.
Like, Jason, how come you haven't killed your victims yet? Oi!
Yeah, that's kind of how I read her here. So yeah.
Great. Now I'm going to read her like that for the rest of the book.
You're welcome.
Okay. And now that reminds me, I worked at a summer camp for blind students in Minnesota, and one of them was from, I think she was from Boston or something, but her mother pulled me aside. She's like, now listen, I'm a nervous wreck mother. I'm like, oh, great. This is going to be fun.
Brog, that guy.
The skipper guy.
We can just call him Brog.
Skipper.
I think they
We're
call
just
going to
go on Skipper, because
okay,
it's easier.
That works, too.
He has a heron walking around with him. And yep.
Rulango, I think. Rulango?
Yeah. Rulango? I always said Rulango, but...
Yeah.
He doesn't speak, but And he doesn't consider himself the law, even though we haven't looked at that book yet.
Do these take place at the same time?
This and Legend of Luke?
Mm-hmm. No.
We kind of tossed around last time, like, how old Luke or even Martin would be here. Yeah, Martin's not walking around yet. And Luke, at best, is probably a kid.
Because
it does mention Verdaga being a conqueror, so... And it does say that Luke, spoilers, was driven out of the Mos Falar area because of Verdaga.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, at best, yeah, Luke's a kid here.
Yeah.
And then we have Bucko's court, who surprisingly has a pretty varied a bunch of people around him. First, we have King Bucko himself, who apparently crowned himself king. I don't mind him.
It's good to be the king.
He's kind of vain, but as Ed's pointed out, but he's not an unenjoyable character. So.
No, he has an arc, though. He kind of starts out a little bit chauvinistic and...
A little, yeah.
just a tad.
But he has more than hares walking around with him. We have his vole rule keepers. I had to work my way through that. But we're told in book one that these are descendants of original Salamandastron hares who walked away. So.
Some of them are. I think some of them are supposed to be from the north. Like
yeah,
Bucko.
The mountain hares.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I noticed something while reading this part, and I never really thought about it before. There are no main characters that are mice in this book.
That is true, yeah.
Well, we've got no Martin running around, so yeah.
Yeah, and... This is the, granted, like, I know I haven't read two of the books, but this is the only one I can think of that doesn't have mice as the main characters, or any main character that's a mouse.
There are canonically no mice before Martin the Warrior.
Yes.
Well, technically that would be Luke and Luke's wife, so.
I'll bring logic into it.
No, Martin was.
Sorry. He's the progenitor.
Born. And then the world just formed his dad. As a means of
this
explanation.
This brings up many questions. I'm trying to think if there's anyone else truly new. We do have a one hair kind of take four point in Stonepaw's group. Stiffener Medic.
Yep.
Because, well, we'll get to Stonepaw in a moment.
And his grandsons.
Yeah, who are at the court of King Bucko.
So. What are their names?
Bob Weave and Southpaw.
Beautiful.
I get it. Very punny.
Maybe you should explain the joke just to make our audience suffer just a little more.
I don't know. I don't want to box anyone's ears over this.
Oh. Okay, that's the end of that round, Jeremy. Let's move on.
Jesus Christ.
Jeremy's probably the most pun. He can invent a pun out of anything.
Yeah, I remember getting through Redwall.
I think I said it before. I'm like a Pundora's box.
Wah wah.
Yep. That was the reaction that deserved.
Please don't want me trying to strangle you through the internet. So you
that's also become the running thing.
So, then we got this new thing we have to talk about in the series. Kind of much lore. Because, you know, maybe Redwall and Matamea are direct sequels, and first one in direct sequel to each other, but it's a time we definitely get a lot more lore that's just picked up because it's book 13 in publishing order. We mentioned, yeah, there's a lot of songs here.
A lot. Okay. And poems.
Yep.
Yeah, the riddle poems, I guess, best way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
So, besides King Bucko sending out, apparently, public notices that anyone's welcome to come challenge him.
Liar. Pants on fire. Kilt on fire?
Yeah, I like how contrived that was. That whole, like, I'm gonna send out these little pamphlets that people use to challenge me. But it's gonna be a riddle. Because Bucko loves riddles.
Okay. We'll go with that. We also have among the riddle poems, we have the back exit out of Salamandastron.
Also dumb.
It kind of flies in the face of what we will see in what was published by this point. But I actually like the fact that Stonepaw and the Harris had to work this out, and they just didn't have it on a scroll from Abbess Germain from 100 years before. They're like, oh, we should probably remember something from our childhood.
Yes, the very, very old hare had to remember. And I mean, that's super annoying when you think you know something that would be helpful to your current situation, but you cannot remember it. That's super annoying.
Yep.
So here's my question. We're told that there is a back exit out of Salamandastron, and it's not an easy one. To get out. Where was this in the book, Salamandastron? Usurp should have eaten. Maybe if he didn't know about it, sure, okay. Mm-hmm. But if the bookends of the book here, is literally Russinoe saying how much research he had to do with this. So he found out about it at some point.
Mm-hmm. I just like to think there was an off-screen moment in Salamandastron where Farrago and his team tried going in through the back, saw the spider crabs, went, no, thank you!
Although Rossano's time was after Earthstripes, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe after Brocktree's generation, this kind of got forgotten, because it seemed to have already been pretty much forgotten at this point. So maybe people just forgot about it.
Yeah, they might not have had to use it, or even, especially because I think to even get out, like that area that they found was not easy to get to as well.
No.
Yeah, it was like tunnels and caves and everything.
Also breaking what we find out in that same book, Salamandastron, we see that Salamandastron has a big underground pool we really don't know how deep it is, which really would have been useful in that book when they were dying of thirst.
I was thinking of that, too.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, we are told at the end of that book that they somehow find a fresh spring that can keep water going for good, but it's like, okay.
Yeah, but the pool is full of bones.
It's full of dead bodies by the end of this, I mean.
I don't know if I'd want to drink out of that water.
Yeah, maybe they found it. We're like, all right, and they just see like a skull float to the top. Never mind.
Yeah.
So we also have the Blood Rat mentioned by name for the first time we've covered in the podcast anyway.
Yep.
Yes.
It's mentioned by name by Brocktree saying, if you want to wield a sword this big and heavy, you have to be, you have to take some badger and blood rat to really get it going.
Eep.
Overcompensating or just trying to impress us up? You make the judge.
I know, it seems
and
to
then
fit,
we actually,
I was going to say, it seems to fit with Brocktree because all of his solutions to his problems in this book seem to stem from, I'm bigger than you and wield a giant sword. Be afraid of me.
Yes.
Yeah, the pointy end goes into the other guy.
Yep.
And lastly, this is introduced at the very end of the book two here, but Bucko cites a hare law, and I'm going to quote from the book. We follow comrades in peace and war. The hare is a perilous beast, we know, but who commands... I write that down wrong. But who commands, who makes our law? The Badger Lords, 'twas always so. So even though this is the earliest chronological book, apparently Badger Lords have always been doing this. Okay. Maybe an early Badger Lord came into existence and the mountain formed around him.
The volcano erupted, and out of the steam emerged a Badger Lord.
I do have debate. This begs some pretty, pretty big questions. Okay, you guys follow Badger Lords. What makes a Badger Lord? Is it merely just species? Because what happens if you've got more than one Badger Lord in the same spot, and they disagree? What if one goes nuts? Are you still obliged to obey him?
Considering what we see of a couple badgers in this franchise, I believe so. Does anyone remember Craiga in the Long Patrol?
Oh,
I was just thinking of her. I was thinking of there were two badger siblings one albino, the other, was it Sunstripe?
It was Earthrise and Earthrite.
Earthrise and Earthlight.
Yeah.
Mm, but they were in a different place. I know in this one, Brocktree left his son because he was like, two badger lords, never in the same place. Bad idea.
Yeah. I'm thinking
what happens if he had...
Or became a teenager, and he's like, I don't want anything to do with that.
Yes.
Well, I think that's kind of the entire thing. Then it's like, who are the hares supposed to follow? There, too. Bad.
Okay, I mean, if Brocktree had made it to Salamandastron and Stonepaw was still alive...
Fight to the death.
Although it seems
okay,
to be...
Okay, you win. I'm going up to the Highlands.
They seem to be governed by some sort of... I don't know what you would call it. Force? Like, fate or something? Because they always, like, follow their dreams or whatever. So maybe this... I don't know, badger god is always making sure that there's only one badger at a time.
Well, they do mention, and obviously we haven't gotten there yet, but in Mossflower, Boar says that when he first came to Salamandastron, Brocktree was still alive, mm-hmm. and that they ruled together for a short time. Granted, at that point, I think there was only like 8 hares left. Lord only knows what happened to the rest of them. But
rule the mountain as father and son.
Just the two of us.
No, I've got Star Wars on the brain. So.
Oh, okay.
My local science museum has what they call an Omnimax dome. Instead of a regular IMAX screen, it's curved.
Ooh.
And I got to see Star Wars 8 on the dome, and it was awesome.
That's cool.
That is dope. I just thought of a really good poster idea.
Hmm.
You know how the badgers in this book have that secret chamber in their either bedroom, forge room, I forget which one, where go and they, you know, trip out and
yes.
get all the carvings on the wall.
Find things.
We mentioned that, yes.
Got those cool carvings on the wall, man.
Yeah, well, it's the fragrant smoke, man. But I just wanted a poster, like a college dorm poster of a badger tripping out that just says, follow your dreams.
Stoned paw, yeah.
I see badgers. This stuff is great.
Another badger lord is coming.
It's like they can see the smoke from the forge. The forge.
Oh, good. He is walking around on trip again. Okay, come on, let's go walking back to bed.
Why do you think the hares are always hungry?
I want food. Oh, man.
That explains everything.
It really does. Along. There isn't much food porn in this section, as there are others.
I mean, there is the eating contest.
Yeah, that's nice, but...
With lots of wine.
I was going to say, you guys have corrupted my reading of these books, because as soon as Bucko fell asleep, I was like, oh, Sister May went back in time and dragged him to
resident poisoner. Where the badgers get their good stuff.
What, does Sister May send a buyer to Salamandastron?
Oh, yeah.
A mouse with a Spanish accent.
Farlo.
Yeah.
Comes back every episode.
Oh, my gosh. All of our tangents are just... connecting.
That's awful. Lots of spices.
All right.
I don't always put hair kings to sleep, but when I do, I use Sister May's potions.
Potions, Stella. Need of your strongest potion.
So.
Anyway.
What's going on? While that's all going on, Brocktree, his group is consisting of himself, Dottie...
Ruff.
Do we even see him?
Hey, he's there. He's guarding Dottie as she's not supposed to...
Oh, right. And we have the mole cook, who's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Girth.
Girth, yes.
Yep.
That's a good mole.
So they have met up with the Gosum early, as we mentioned last time, one of the few female Logalogs we'll ever meet.
I think she's the only one, actually.
Hmm.
And their thing is they're just traveling down to Streamford.
Like, we're here too.
And they run right into Fleet Gut's group.
Yep.
Fleet Gut. And it fortunately just happens to be at the one spot they need to be to summon Bucko's guards to guide them to the camp.
How convenient.
Ain't that great?
Huh. I'm just imagining, like, in bright neon, Bucko's camp.
Like a casino sign.
Vacancy.
Yeah.
It did remind me a lot of a Renaissance fair, that first description where, like, squirrels are doing flips and people are fighting each other, like, on logs and stuff. I was like, yeah, I could see this.
Huzzah!
Huzzah!
Yes.
They hand them a little horned helmet as they enter, and a map.
But that's basically their journey is basically, hey, nice to meet you. Oh, you're from Salamandastron? Okay, we'll help you out. But we're going to go to this King Bucko guy and steal all his people for our army. And they go to the King Bucko, and we'll get to him in just a moment. Meanwhile, back at the mountain, we have a much more serious problem. Storyline going on. Yeah, so if at the end of book one, Stonepaw and his remaining hares who are not captured, they're down in the catacombs of Salamandastron, trying to stay out of vermin notice as they figure out what the heck they're going to do.
And there's about 18 of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Thereabouts. And Stonepaw and one other hare, they start, like as I mentioned, they work out this riddle poem. But it basically says, you have to climb all the way up this long rope, go out a giant hole that looks like a plum cake, and dodge very pinchy spider crabs.
Sounds piece like a cake. good adventure.
Reminds me of what's that moment in it's Kuzco, Emperor's New Groove, where they're tied to a log.
Oh my god. Let me guess. We're about to go through a giant hole that looks like a cake.
Mm-hmm.
Crabs in the pool that are going to be pinchy?
Yep.
Bring it on.
I haven't either. I think I've seen that clip. That's it.
Well, yeah, the clip is worth seeing because it's one of the funnier bits Disney did in that era.
I should just probably see the whole thing. My friends are scandalized at the amount of movies I have not seen, but I just... Because descriptive audio is relatively new. Like, for right now, I could pretty much see any movie I want and have it described, but back when I was growing up, that wasn't really an option, so I was like, eh, movies, I'd rather read, you know, because I'd get more out of it that way. So...
Well, understandable.
I missed out on a lot of movies growing up.
Yeah, I swear to God, no pun intended, I get badgered a lot for not having seen certain movies.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. My friends gave me a heck for not seeing Goonies until about 2 years ago.
I still haven't seen Goonies.
I don't get the yes.
Okay.
The Goonies. I don't get the hype around the Goonies.
Thank you.
I have a feeling if I see it at this point, I'm gonna be like, all right, it's just kind of shrug. So
yeah, there are some things like that. Like you see it at a certain time, and it just becomes part of your childhood and your nostalgia, and then you try to be like, this is the most awesome thing ever, and people who haven't experience they're like, is it though?
Yeah.
And then there's things as a kid that scare the bejesus out of you, and then you watch them later as an adult, or read them later as an adult, or what have you, and they're like, huh. Okay.
That was Spirited Away from my girlfriend. Great music.
That was
film.
Gremlins 1 and 2 for me.
Mm.
Speaking of segues.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Rolling right along.
Back to what we're actually supposed to be talking about.
As Stonepaw and his hares are getting out, suddenly, oops, we got noticed, and they've got all of the vermin coming at them.
Well, don't worry. And they said that Stonepaw can fit through the hole there, so he'll be fine, right?
Sure.
Yeah, he might order his hares to leave without him, and he's going to sacrifice himself to buy time for them. And in one of the more, I mean, it's an awesome fight scene, but one of the more, like, oh my god scenes in this book, he goes down fighting.
Mm-hmm.
Right to the bitter end. Doesn't matter that he's elderly and not feeling good, he basically gets taken on by Blood Wrath and he beats them all up.
Yep. To the point where he scares the captains, to where the little Grottle the Spox is going like, oh, kill him, just kill him, I don't care, kill him, please.
Yeah.
And his last act is after they've managed to tie him down with ropes and nets to break said ropes, use the net and take about a half dozen or more vermin down into the deep pool with them. And basically drowns.
That would be an awful way to die, like, weighted down with, like, this net, and, no, no thank you.
And you're, yeah, you're one of the vermin in the net, you're trapped against a very angry badger lord who's dragging you down to the deeps.
And he's laughing. I forgot about that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Damn. I mean, darn.
I mean, Blood Wrath kind of makes you crazy.
Mm.
Yeah.
I have a Snickers.
Was that
he's saying if Stonepaw should have just had a Snickers.
Okay. I thought you were just randomly saying I have a Snickers. Like, no. Okay.
I wish I had Snickers. All I got is this trail mix.
Yeah.
I understand now. I'm with you now. I was very confused for a little bit.
Yeah. Stone Paul, you get a little Blood Wrath when you're hungry.
Turns into a mouse.
Martin's like, yeah, no problem. I'm good now.
Oh, we are using that when we come to Martin. Oh my god.
So would he have survived this fight, even if, like, so say he, like, somehow was managed to be rescued after fighting this very strenuous fight at his age, do you think he would have survived, or if it would have killed him anyway?
I'm in the latter camp. I think this was, like, his last great hurrah, using up that much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we saw, again, we're investing ahead here, in Salamandastron Earthstripe at one point, he is literally, he could best be charitably called in critical condition, but he forces himself up and still manages to join the final battle.
Oh, that was so sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was one of the most unsatisfactory, not really unsatisfactory, like unresolved deaths, because his daughter comes back too late and, spoilers, and it just makes me sad every time.
And his brother.
Yeah.
And his grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, I'm saying Stonepaw would have basically killed himself doing this.
Yeah, I think so too.
So,
yeah.
And Tron takes it well that he didn't get the hairs he wanted, the remaining free hairs, or the badger.
Very well. Although he doesn't really have a fit of rage yet, does
no.
he? He just is like, you guys are annoying.
Yeah, he doesn't snap anyone's neck and then throw them out a window this time.
Yes.
Well, I told you, Vermin HR had a long talk with him.
So. Yes.
You can berate them and turn them into pure slaves, but you can't snap their necks and throw them out a window. And like, you ever done that since? And
Sarah
gets out the window, sees a pile. No, not at all.
Tron's basic solution to this is basically to demote his captains who are responsible for bringing him, Stonepaw, and promote our two random new recruits.
Oh, yeah.
Rip Fang and what's his name?
Dumai.
Thank you. And they take to their new roles very very well, aka in the words of basically an employee who's been given way too much power and starts to use it judiciously.
Yes.
Yeah. The only thing we don't get from them is maniacal laughter.
No, they're too cool.
Although
for
they
that.
Do. They do straight up kill one of their new underlings.
And that
just
scene was so dumb, because it was literally like, ha ha ha, bet you can't kill that person.
He's
like,
he's
bet you I can.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You did.
He's like,
but
oh,
you can't outrun an arrow.
Yeah,
and Dumai is, I think, officially the dumbest character in this book. Why'd you make me kill him?
I get that it's just like, you know, these are vermin. They're bad guys, and they're probably gonna get their own later, but it just seems so useless. Like, it was just, and then they bully Grottle and the Captain Raoul.
Fraggle Rock.
Yeah.
Fraggle Rock.
Yeah.
Oh no, wait, that was the other one.
Yeah.
Fraggle's the other one.
Fraggle or something.
Yeah. Well, the
yeah, we called him Fraggle Rock last time.
Yep. But then, this one's Frau. I don't know. I saw that. I was thinking Frau Blücher from Young Frankenstein.
Although I do think Meyer Fleck kind of liked that name, which is sad because that's the one they killed.
Yeah.
Like that was a pretty decent name, like compared to some of the other ones.
So. Grotto on the other guy, though, they work out, hey, we figured out how the hairs got out. Let's do the same thing. Oops, push you in the spider crab pool.
And then Grotto floats away, and I'm sure we'll never see him again for the rest
never.
Of the book.
There's
never
a picture
ever.
In this book that I love, which is just, like, a very dilapidated Grotto, like, staring angrily at a mountain.
Oh, yeah.
On a log, he's like, arr! I'm like,
Yep. We'll never see him again. Her. Him. Him. I mean, it's not like he has a vengeance against Trun for crippling him and killing his entire family.
That was also reckless evil. He was like, hey, Grottle, remember when I crippled you? And Grottle's like, yeah, I remember.
And then remember how I killed your entire family?
Remember how I'm telling the readers this exposition that would not make sense for me to tell you any other way?
And I kind of get, I do get why he feels like he can say that, because what's Grottle gonna do? Like, you know, seriously.
Oh.
I kind of read it. Now I'm thinking of like Chris Farley in SNL where he does like his interview thing. It's like, hey, remember that? It talks to Arnold Schwarzenegger. Remember that time you were on the Terminator? Yeah. That was awesome. Hey, Grottle, remember that time I killed your parents? That was awesome.
So, yeah, Trun takes it well. He, as we've seen, he still has other problems. Vermin HR has been on his case. That's the fact that they're out of food.
And then when a few guards try to take some food for themselves, Trun decides to execute them by drowning them. I have a feeling Trun is like, look, I have enough troops that cover the land. I can kill about 40, so it's fine.
And, I mean, all these four random rats were doing were just keeping a few of the extra fish they had caught.
I would probably do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think any of us wouldn't have done the same thing. So
we're all dying, is what you're saying.
Woo!
Four of us are going to get staked out in front of the Elementistron, and
sounds like a good time.
Karangul. Thank you.
Karangul. Yeah, I don't know. Karangul.
Kangaroo.
Yes,
Kangaroo.
I love that.
That's his name now.
By the end of this book, every character is going to have a different name.
Yes.
No, Karangul gets instructions from Trun. Hey, you know those hares we've been keeping prisoner?
They look a little tasty. I mean, tempting. I mean, yeah, tasty. That's what I meant.
Yeah, we're going to eat them. And I have to say, I mean, thankfully, yeah, it doesn't happen because they get out and they escape. But is this the first time we've seen, like, non-mammal cannibalism in the series?
Well, is it really cannibalism if they're a different species?
I don't know.
Or am I going...
predation, if you will.
They call the lizards in Martin the Warrior cannibal lizards, so I think they mean, like, any sentient being, which I don't think would count
and
fish.
Then there's the toads in us. Is it Salamandistron?
Yes.
Yeah.
And Mossflower, I think. No.
Owl and Redwall.
Captain Mossflower also. I always remember the line, toad flesh.
Toad.
Yes.
Meat's back on the menu, boys.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
What's that from again?
Lord of the Rings.
That's why I didn't know what it was from.
Yeah, the orcs are given strict orders not to eat the hobbits, to bring them back to Isengard alive and unharmed.
Mm-hmm.
And when a couple of them start getting that idea, the leader orc breaks their neck and says, "Okay, other orcs, here's your meat."
Back to the Court of Hares. I actually looked this up because I was curious about the quote-unquote northern accent that's used a lot in this franchise. It is definitely based off a Scottish accent.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I figured. Brocktree walks in, everyone's like, "Well, you're going to challenge Bucko, right? I mean, you're a badger lord." He's like, "No, I can't do it." "Yeah, you can."
And, yeah, I mean, a hedgehog challenges him at one point, so it's like, eh.
A child hedgehog.
No, an actual hedgehog. Like, that's the first challenge he gets when they arrive.
Oh, I'm thinking of something else. And then Skittle walks over to Bucko and starts beating him up.
Yes.
That was cute. I think that's our first moment where you see, like, Bucko's not, like, a villain, but, you know, he's kind of, he's a jerk, but he at least knows how to play nice with the kid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I get why Brocktree's like, no, it'd be better if another hare challenges him, but given the fact that Brocktree walks right in and Bucko calls him out, "Well, I'm a king, aren't you going to bow or bend a knee?" And Brocktree turns right around, "Well, I'm a badger lord, you should stand up in my presence." It's like, yeah, they're kind of polite with each other.
Yep, and then
okay.
Bucko shakes his head and tries to crush his paw, and Brocktree's like, "No."
Yeah, that's a bad idea.
Crunch. Here's the thing, I mean, I get King Bucko gave himself the title, but arguably he does or somewhat earn it. He's a decent fighter and whatnot. Has Brocktree really earned the title of Badger Lord, or is he just going on, "Hey, my dad's the boss of Salamandastron"? Bow.
Well, wasn't he, like, Lord of Brockhall?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah,
he was.
Big man, have fair sword.
Honestly, though, if you were, you know, half the size of this guy and he stood up in front of you with his giant sword and said he was a lord, would you really want to argue the point with him?
Yes, Lord, sir. Whatever you say, Lord, sir.
Reminds me of my entire mental image of him is Guts from Berserk.
Okay.
I'm not sure if any of you know him.
I do.
No.
Nope.
Giant.
Basically,
is that a W?
Big sword.
Let me guess. Is that a WWE thing? Or?
No. It's an anime.
Oh. Oh, okay.
I've played a couple of the games.
Okay. Now you just made me think of Ultimate Warrior. Dang it. never mind.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. That's
it's
a real
reach. Wrestler you know, I'm assuming. That's why.
Well, other than, you know, he should not be named.
Redacted.
But
Voldemort?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
There's a couple wrestlers. There's actually a couple guys that fit that description.
We're referring to Hulk Hogan since he's been made person non grata by the WWE.
Gotcha.
So.
Oh, there's Guts.
Guts.
Huh. So a little bit of Cloud Strife in there. Got it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. So he basically says, hey, Dottie, you can totally beat Bucko. Okay. But Bucko takes the challenge. He gets the formal challenge, and what does he do? No. He does worse than that, though. We're told his reply is basically, "You're a girl," and the answer is no.
Yes, and that the first time I read it filled my little feminist heart with rage. I was like, no, you did not just say that.
And I like how Brocktree leaks the information because, you know, he comes up, he's like, yeah, he says he's not going to challenge you because you're a girl, and she's like, what? He's like, yep, and then he spent 10 minutes making fun of you. And she's like, really? And he's like, then he insulted your mom. She's like,
he does kind of go on for a while with that. It's like half a page.
I just have to say, though, I really do like Dottie, and I know she can be a little bit annoying, but I just like that there are other hare heroes in the books, and they're mostly male, and they are just as annoying. So I like that Jake didn't make her less annoying because she was a female. I like that she is, she has the same, like, the same fault. She's kind of vain. She's, you know, she talks too much. You know, she's a little bit too forthright sometimes. You know, things like maybe with a female you would expect to be dialed back a bit. I'm glad he didn't do that. I'm glad he made her a brat.
Yeah, because if you look at, like, Fleet Scott, who's supposed to be, like, you know, one of the elder characters, and he's a whiny little jerk, like, the entire book.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. You've got these this tribe of squirrels going along with you because you insulted the honor of their leader. And Jughead has every right to be pissed at you. And he keeps insulting her. It's like, dude, you have allies. Stop.
Yeah.
I've noticed it's a running thing with a lot of the hares in this book. Like, a lot of the older hares, like, the ones that are captured are constantly, like, whining and complaining, and it's like, how did you, like, I get it with, like, Dottie, it totally makes sense, because, you know, she's young, she starts learning throughout the book. With these older ones, you guys have been through so much, why are you still so pissy?
I think they're not as, military order as they are later on. Once the long patrol becomes a full thing, I think it's dialed back. And then you get Tammo as my favorite protagonist in one of the Redwall books. And hares kind of take a bit of a lesser turn.
Hmm. That's a good point.
But yeah, Fleet Scut.
Yeah.
Comes up on his squirrels. Why didn't you die on the mountain?
They're like, yeah. Man, on our mountain.
We got nothing to do with this.
Outnumbered you.
It's like, because you have no honor at all.
If you had real honor, you would have fought them, killed maybe 20 of them, and then died. And then we'd be right back to where we started. That would have shown everyone.
Yeah, and I get that maybe at first when he's just mad, he's angry, he's like, I couldn't do anything. It's more so he's upset with himself. But yeah. Then later on, he's still being a jerk to Juka. I'm just like, yeah. Chill.
Heck, Dottie actually takes not having anything to eat better than Fleet Scut does.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God, yes. And apparently it's supposed to be worse for younger hares, and it's like, but Fleet Scut literally just can't stop talking about how hungry he is in Book 1 when he has to give up his rations.
Yep.
So the fact that he ceded authority to Brocktree is probably a good thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What else?
Well, so we get the three challenges that Dottie has to go through.
What is your name?
I love the bragging challenge. It makes me laugh.
What is your favorite color? Yep.
I love that, too. He's like, I'm Bucko Big Bones, blah, blah, blah. Oh, look, he knows his own name. Isn't that cute?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I was born in a storm. Oh, really? Did you get wet?
And then Bucko disqualifies himself by trying to hit her.
What a gentleman.
Dude, you started this fight.
Dude has no chill.
No.
Man's not hot.
Hashtag toxic masculinity. I had to. It was right there.
I think he
no, no, I appreciate it.
Alamandistron herb.
Yeah.
Salaman.
Salamandistron.
Salamandistron, man. You lie.
Oh, my God. The second challenge is an eating contest, and we've seen, not in the books we've covered, but there are other eating contests in the series. Again, book Salamandastron has one, where we literally have a hare and a shrew go against each other.
Yep.
And the hare doesn't stop, ever.
Yeah, even after he wins, he challenges others, and they're like, oh, that's funny that he made that joke, and the Mara's like, nah, that's not a joke.
Yeah. And he never seems to get sick. He's just like, no, give me more food, seriously.
Yep.
But we have Bucko and Dottie eating in this eating contest. And both of them have starved themselves.
And throughout it, they decide to give Bucko the Sister May special.
Yes.
Not, well, that's unconfirmed. Suspected, but unconfirmed. But Dottie just basically paces herself from all the way from breakfast all the way into lunch. And Bucca falls asleep.
Yep, and because cannot be wakened.
He's been eating this himself this entire time. At a pretty quick rate. And then Dottie never wants to see food ever again.
How long will that last? Probably like a day.
Dinner.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm thinking dinner. I think it's neat,
basically
though,
dinner.
That they did come up with kind of a clever way for her to go about it, to try and bait him and get him into a position where he would fall asleep. You know, because, I just like that not everything is solved with brute force, except when badgers are concerned, where everything is solved with brute force.
Even Constance. Come on.
Constance!
Yeah, but it always works out well for Constance.
Except for when she gets locked in the gatehouse.
And then she breaks free by using force.
Yeah, that's true.
That was my favorite part of the Redwall TV show where... Did this happen in the books with the big crossbow?
She tries to shoot Clooney and ends up killing Cheese Thief instead?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that happened from the books.
I like that. She's because... like, if we can't defend, we will make a bigger bow. And a bow will shoot a log into the sky. And it will be murder. And everybody's like, oh my god!
Well, there's also Madameo where she's like, I'll drown the birds. And that was a good ploy. You threatened to drown the birds. What ploy?
Blub, 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 blub. Yeah. Well, I'm sorry, was I not supposed to?
What is badger without murder?
I am badger, hear me roar.
Yeah. We are
big. So the last challenge is boxing. And yeah, I don't have any snark for this. This was actually an entertaining fight.
Yeah. No, this was good.
And even Bucko admitting, yeah, he beat me. Here, take the crown.
Why?
I like how she hands them to Broctree, and she's like, here, have the crown and the thingamy.
You could have been queen. In place of Bucko, you would have a queen as terrible as the dawn.
You'd have to listen to her sing every day.
Oh, no.
But now she gives it right over to Broctree, and he's like, cool. And he turns it into, and he basically crushes it in his hand and turns it into an accessory on his sword.
As a badger does.
It's important to accessorize, right?
I can just picture if the craftsman who made that crown is nodding, you can just picture him, hey, my crown!
Just sobbing.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Did the boxing match happen in this book?
Yeah.
Yes, there it is.
And then she's like, okay, here's the crown to Broctree, and Broctree's like, okay, everybody, listen up. We're all going to Salamandastron, and you're all going to fight my army to take back the mountain.
Hooray!
It's like, we're going to go kill Ungat Trun, and Bucko's like, Ungat Trun? I want to kill him too, and I'm surprised they didn't all just have a silent moment like, oh, maybe we could have avoided a lot of this.
You could have! Yes. Come on!
But, you know what? We got character progression for Dottie and...
And Bucko as well, because he got humbled a little bit.
Yeah.
You know.
That was, the most frustrating thing. Like, oh, come on! Because, like I mentioned last episode, I remember reading this one. I don't remember anything about it. So this was about right before I left the series. So,
yeah, I feel like outside of Stonepaw's death, there aren't a lot of huge moments until then, the very end, where it's like, all right, they beat Bucko, they find out that Bucko was actually originally building this army to fight Trun, and now the Salamandastron heirs are freed and are setting up a rebellion, and Broctree is rallying his troops.
Yes.
Sounds about right.
And then we get one of the hares trying to pronounce Salamandastron that made me laugh. Salamo, whatchamacallit?
Yeah. Laugh. Salmon Strong.
So yeah, that's where book two ends us. Now we're on the way back to the mountain, and Tron still has it, but he has no food.
I was going to say, he wishes it was called Salmon Strong. Then he'd have something to feed his troops.
incompetent vermin. You would think a conqueror
would
think
that. I should probably go fishing again.
Oh, we'll find out how that works out for them in book three.
Yes, I've got this feeling that it won't work out so well, but I cannot imagine where that's coming from. And it did not at all come from the fact that I may or may not have read a little bit of ahead of this.
AD, no.
Sorry. I was very good this time. I did not spoil future things. I just spoiled future books.
And we all did.
Yeah, we all kind of... Even though it's like in previous episodes, we've constantly like, well, we haven't gotten to that book yet. Well, we haven't gotten to that book yet. We kind of threw that out the window today.
Yeah.
It's like Trun with his troops. We threw it out the window.
Yeah.
Hey, sir, I've been telling... That's the third one this morning. You can't keep doing that.
Yes, I can. There are plenty more where they came from. Plus people to feed now.
No.
Got thousands.
sir... Look out there. There's thousands.
I'll throw you out the window next.
It's as big as the mountain.
Sir, I signed the paychecks. You really don't want to get rid of me.
Ungatrun hates accounting.
Now I want another poster of a fox looking at a W-2 form and just looking very confused.
No, it's Badrang's HR. He's looking at work. Since Claw can't sign his name, he's trying to figure out what, like, make head or tails of the form.
Oh, God.
So that's book two.
Yay!
One more book to go. And I'm sure... I'm totally sure that there's no... I mean, the good guys... always have to fight, always win, right? I mean, it's not like Droctree's in any real danger.
No, we certainly have no idea if he's going to survive after the end of this book. I mean,
yeah.
Totally have no idea there. And I'm sure there won't be any more big hero deaths by the end of the book.
Hey.
Nope, of course not.
Nope, never.
I'm just thinking of the, My Heart Will Go On, except played with recorders. I don't know why that's in my head right now. I'm looking that up.
My Broctree Will Go On.
Oh.
To Salamandastron.
Find out next time for the podcast sing-along, where we sing all of the songs in Redwall, and one of us will play a recorder.
Okay, and I don't think I can end it any better than that. Katie, and Drew, thank you for coming on. We'll see you for book three.
Thanks for having us.
Jeremy, where can they find us on the internet?
You can find us on recorderonthewall.com, right? I always ask that. I am never sure that I'm giving the right website. recorderonthewall.com. You can find us on iTunes and Google Play Podcast, and we are also, I believe we're mentioned on the official Redwall forums, and we're also on the Redwall subreddit.
Yes, we are. We'll see you next time, folks.
Take care, everyone.
Bye.
Ciao.